are listening to the Traditional Outdoors Podcast.
Well, dude, you missed a heck of a trip last weekend.
I see that. I see that you guys had another really good, eventful outing with a lot of friends and whatnot. So, yeah. So, how was it, man?
Well, I mean, it was good and better in some ways and not as good in others. But, you know, I'll get into a little bit of that in a minute. But, you know, you actually came up while we were up there because somewhere along the line we got talking about, you know, how things have changed since when, you know, I used to go up there when I was younger. And it was about I guess it's probably 7 or 8 years that I didn't get to go because I was in the position that you're in now where, you know, the kids' activities take precedence. And from the time Bella was 6 and I started coaching her, you know, soccer team with a Y, that you just couldn't go. It always fell, you know, we were wide open on soccer and had games and so forth. So, you know, I didn't start going back until a few, year or two after, you know, she finished the soccer thing. And then, you know, still was always things that come up, right? So, the regularity of this trip didn't start back up again until what, 22 was when we started. And we kind of been going every year and planned to keep it going. But yeah, you were missed. We talked about you.
Well, that's nice. My ears weren't burning or anything, so I assume that it's good. I thought I had, you know, Kenzie's doing double duty with water polo and track right now, and she was going to stop doing track because it was too much, and then the day she was going to tell her coach, she never came home from practice or from school and stayed at practice, and she decided to stick it out. So now she's going to do track, and Aubrey's doing track, and they both got banned, and yeah, it's something, man. It's not easy, I'll tell you that, but trying to carve out times to record and do things outside and you know, all that stuff. But I'm working on it. We'll get in a routine. So,
well, as far as I know, the streams aren't going anywhere, and no. I do really think you would enjoy it. And, you know, part of this too, maybe, you know, I'm relearning the streams a little bit because I didn't fish them for so long. You know, that may be part of the success, but anyway, we'll get into some of that. Cause I've, you know, there's definitely some things to go into there and some theories I can bring out. But, you know, Tom was supposed to make it, he and Jim were supposed to come up, and I'm not going to go into, why that's, you know, that's Tom's personal business, but, he had a situation come up and he had to cancel really almost at the last minute. I want to say it was maybe Tuesday or Wednesday, me and Derek got a text from him and said he was pretty sure he was not going to be able to make it. And then the next day he said, yeah, it's just not going to happen. So, luckily he came up, spent the weekend with me a few weeks ago on a work related thing. So I got to at least see him and catch up with him, but he was really missed in camp too. So hope he and Jen, I hope they're able to come back next year and maybe something will loosen up or lighten up for you to where you can make it next year, but we'll wait and see.
Yeah. Too bad. Really good fishing. And the opener ends is at this time of year where there's spring break and that's the big one is spring break. You know, we don't usually do too much on spring break, but since we've only got so many spring breaks with the kids left,
right,
we kind of have to.
Sure.
But yeah, it's you know, it's fishing season. It's getting ready for shoots. It's getting ready at camp. It's getting, you know, there's all kinds of stuff. Turkey season coming. I mean, there's just all kinds of stuff going on that it's like, man, a lot of really good stuff happens this time of year, and it's just like trying to carve out time to do everything is just tough. But it's good too, you know. It's good to stay busy and whatnot. But what was your lineup, man? Who all came?
So it ended up being Derek. Derek and Susan. So Derek Sheehan and Susan, his wife, me and Amy went, and my brother joined us. So, it was just five of us. Amy didn't fish any at all. She just kind of, hung out at the cabin most of the time. She had some other stuff that she wanted to do, you know, hobby, personal stuff. So she spent time at the cabin. They came out and, hung out with us for a little bit. Sunday, and Susan came out with Derek and fished a little bit on Saturday. But for the most part, it was the three amigos, me, Derek, and my brother Mike. And before I get into any more of that, I will tell you this, just so you can keep it in mind, and I will let you know. So where we go is actually only about a 2.5 hour drive for me from my house to where I can be on the water. So I'm going to probably drive back up in a few weeks and just see what the fishing's like. And when I say the season opener, it is a little bit deceiving. And I say it's deceiving because the state of North Carolina closes these streams for the month of March. So we know there is some stocking that takes place. And again, we'll talk about some of that in a minute. But, you know, it's not like there's a big gap in the amount of time you could fish. So we just always fished it after the season reopened. So I've kind of always done that. The only other time I've been up, I went up once Memorial Day weekend with Lori and Bella, and we just stopped and fished for an hour or two. It actually caught some fish, and then I've been up once like in October, and it really didn't have much luck at all. So, you know, maybe sometime over the course of this year, I may try to go up there. Well, that was nice. Make a lot of noise while you're recording, dummy. I may try to go up there, you know, a few times over the course of the year and just see, you know, what happens, and I'll keep you posted. It like I said, it may be changing. I'll go into that a little bit. But so everybody drove up Friday. This was a cabin that Derek and Susan had rented back in 2021. And that year it was Derek and Susan and me and Brandon Gravett. And Brandon and I camped. So we camped right on one of the streams, and Derek and Susan stayed in the cabin and really liked the cabin. So last year we had another big group, and the cabin that we had this time, I think, wasn't available. So Derek rented a different one, and then we were back in the 2021 cabin this year. It was really nice, right on one of the streams that we actually fished all day Sunday, but on a section that we don't really fish much. I'll get into some of that in a minute. But so everybody got there Friday. Derek had made some chili from a wild hog that Rob Gillow actually took. I think it was Rob's is what he told me. Some of that hog, and you know, everybody just kind of ate as they came in because it was all different times. And much to Derek's dismay, I pretty much made the announcement that my plan was to be up at 5:30 and I was going to be on the water by the time it got light. Anyway, we rolled out early Saturday morning and hit the stream. But let's see, where was I going with that?
I don't know.
So anyway, got up and had breakfast, told some more stories. It's funny when you get me and Mike, you know, Mike and I think the first time that I fished this primary stream that we go to, and it's one that's, you know, Mike and I are really fond of. The first time we fished that stream, I would think I was 14. I know I didn't have my license yet, so I was either 14 or 15. And Mike would have been 9 or 10. So we've been, you know, off and on, we went there it was pretty much an annual thing. We went there about every year for several years. In fact, Mike went up until the time he joined the Marine Corps. But so there's a lot of tales, you know. You've heard the one about him letting his wet sneakers burn up in the fire. Mm-hmm. There's another one. The first time we went, we got there at like midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, and me and Mike jumped out and we set this brand new tent that we had bought. I don't even remember where we got it from. Some cheap tent. And we set this tent up and everybody just crawled in and went to sleep. And we woke up the next morning and quickly realized that we had to move the tent because we had set it up. I don't know why, but there was a bunch of wild boars, Russian boars, that had decided that was the spot that they wanted to relieve themselves. So we basically set up in a bunch of pig poo. So we We moved the tent. All these stories kept coming. And there's others. One trip that we went, you know, we get up there, and you have to understand that, you know, for Mike and I, this was our one vacation out of the whole year. Growing up, you know, on the farm, we'd go up there for 2 to 3 days, and that was it. So we got up there this one time, and actually the same tent, and we got up there late Friday night, and it started raining before daylight, and it just poured all day on Saturday. And because it's up in the mountains and these streams are so high, I mean, they can be full out, blown out, flooded. And if it stops raining, you know, within 4 or 5 hours, the water levels come down. You can actually get out and start fishing. So we're just holding out hope, you know. And my dad, he still got it. It's not running, but he still got it. Had a 78 Ford Bronco. And he just slept and lived in the back of the Bronco. And every few hours, he'd roll the window down and ask us if everything was still dry in the tent. And of course, Lane and Mike, you know, we're, yeah, everything's fine. Everything's fine. Because all the groceries, all the food, everything's in this tent with us. And after about half the day, I guess it was getting on around 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, my dad finally figured out something's not right. And he didn't even ask us. We just heard the tent unzipping. And when he unzipped the bottom of the tent, the stuff, the bags of bread and stuff, it would float, were just floating and started rushing because the tent was just full of water. It was bad. And that was the end of that trip. We never even got to cast a line that time. He pretty much said, all right, we're heading home. He packed everything up. But anyway, and there's other stories that goes into that. Maybe I'll share those another time. But anyway, we were telling some of these stories, and, you know, it you could just start to see it, the light breaking. So we packed everything up and headed to the first stream. Now we fish in Graham County, North Carolina, and there's a lot of streams there, but there's really, I guess, really three that we primarily fish. And this year we actually only fished two of them. But we always start on Santila Creek. And there's a big Santila and a little Santila, but we're fishing big Santila. It feeds right into Lake Santila, which at one time, probably been 10 or 15 years, it was like one of the top, bass destinations in the country. But I think since then it's kind of fell off. But, you turn in on a Forest Service road and you ride probably a mile and a half, 2 miles, and finally hit the actual creek. And then you can take that probably another, I don't know, 5 or 6 miles maybe. But like I said, Mike and I have fished this since we were kids. We pretty much know and have names actually for some of the pools. So we already knew where we were going. Derek, I'm sorry, I didn't state this. Derek stayed back at the cabin. He said he was just going to hang out there. And when Susan was up and about, they would join us. So let's see. There's actually a lot of people that fish this stream that I know. So I'll go into a little bit of detail because I constantly, people comment on my post and some even recognize the stream. But when you drive in, you actually cross this bridge that crosses over, and then you kind of hang to the left and you start following the stream up. And I guess it's probably a mile or a mile and a half. And there's a big pullout. It's, if you don't know where it's at, you won't see it because it kind of pulls out and is diagonally facing back the way you're coming. So it's hard to see it when you come up on it if you don't know where it's at, unless you're coming down the mountain. But it's a big parking area because there's a path that you walk down 100 yards or so. And there's two really big, nice campsites down away from the road on the stream. And right where those campsites are, just below that, when you stepped onto the water, it is just a massive, massive run. Just deep pool. The pool's on the far side of the stream, but I'd love to know how deep it is, but I would almost bet there's spots in this thing that are 12 to 15 foot deep at least. I mean, you can't, even on the clearest days when the water's just gin clear, you can't see the bottom. I mean, it's really kind of odd for a stream this size to have a pool like that. But above that, about 100 yards or so, there's another area that it's kind of like my goat. It's where I always start. Every time I go there, it's where I always start. So Mike and I navigate our way through the rhododendron and the blowdowns and, you know, snagging up our fly line. Well, my fly line, Mike's a spin fisher. I'm trying to get him started. I'm going to get him hooked into fly fishing, but it hadn't worked yet. So, but anyway, we finally get up to this pool and Mike said, Mike's spinning fishing spinners. So he typically is a cast up and across because I was planning to start with streamers, I just worked my way around to the top of this run so I could cast across and mend the line a few times and then let the streamer swing and then fish the, you know, up to the dead drift on it just a little bit. And the first cast, man, that thing just perfect laying. I was fishing a little baby brook trout's what they call it. It's just a bucktail streamer. And this thing lays out perfectly, and I mend the line a couple of times, and it swings down. And just as the line, you know, got kind of tight and that little streamer started to rise, man, one hit it hard and pulled that up. And honestly, all the fish that we caught on Saturday were at least 14 inches long, and this one ended up being a beautiful little brook. But as soon as I brought it to net, I thought, well, that's a holdover. That's odd to catch, you know, your first fish being a holder because it is a stock stream. But yeah, the first one I pulled in was a holdover brook, and surprisingly, almost shocked me. I actually caught a fish before my brother did because him fishing them spinners, man, he's usually pretty deadly on them. But anyway, I've been rambling on here. I didn't give you a chance to jump in. Any questions or thoughts before I continue rambling?
No, the only one I really got is that what's keeping Mike from fly fishing? Is it because he's deadly with the spinners? He's just having a lot of success because he's done it all those years and doesn't want to switch over or what?
Honestly, he just doesn't have the time to hit the water like I do. So when he goes, I'm kind of speaking for him a little bit. Well, we did talk about it just a little bit, but you know, he wants to catch fish, and you and I both know that is definitely never a guarantee it's never a guarantee with any one of them, but I would say it's probably a higher probability of success with a, you know, a spinning rig and mm-hmm. some, you know, rooster tails, Panther Martins, MEPs, those kind of things. And it's his comfort zone. I mean, I'm not going to lie. And, you know, if he has fun, and that's all that matters to me. But I do think, and he was asking more questions this time. So I think he's starting to get intrigued by it. I gave him a 4-weight rod reel line last year. But I honestly don't know if he's even had a chance to get out and play around with it. Mike still works the farm with my dad, and he works a lot of long hours. And, you know, him and his wife have a bunch of animals. He has to, you know, take care of those every morning, every evening. He just doesn't have a lot of time. But, you know, I'm hoping some of that's going to change over the next few years, especially if I get moved back up there. But anyway, we'll work on it.
Well, that's cool, though. I got a buddy that's really big into spin casting, too, with crankbaits. Like, he's been doing it with bass and pike and stuff for a really, really long time, and he's been inviting me out to fish for quite a few years now, and we just haven't really got a chance to do it. And, I mean, there's a whole thing with that, too. It's a cool way to fish. I mean, even when I was younger, when we spin casted quite a bit, we didn't throw a lot of crankbaits. We were worm fishermen. I mean, we just fished worm and bobbers most of the time, probably because my dad didn't trust us with crankbaits because mm-hmm. we just would have, like, snagged on everything. We were already bad enough. So he wasn't going to be wasting crankbaits out in the middle of the Sheboygan River while we're in the weeds while we're, you know, because most of the time, like, you know, it was funny you mentioned that that tent story. Well, we were terrified of my dad when we were younger. I mean, my dad would never hurt a fly, but with us, but when we ever told him anything and anything bad happened, my dad would fly off the handle in just a Ralph Cramden fashion. I mean, just totally just go off and irritated. Right. Mm-hmm. And we had, I'll tell a story one of these days about the first time we got a boat and took it out into the water, because it was a disaster, and it sprung a leak and everything, and it was hilarious. And but we had a habit of not telling them when we were snagged fishing. And we would just sit there, and we would just, the bobber would sit in one spot, and we just jerked the line, you know, like it was fine.
Right.
And then he'd look over at us after a while and go, "You're snagged, aren't you?" And we'd be like, "I don't know. I don't think so." And he's like, "Well, either you got a fish or you're snagged. And since it's not moving, I'm assuming you're snagged." You know, and he'd come over and he'd fix one. While I was fixing one, one of us other kids, you know, I've got two brothers, younger brothers.
Mm-hmm.
They'd get snagged. And then my mom would get snagged. And he spent more time fixing our snags than actual fishing. And to this day, I don't know why he took us fishing.
Because that's what dads do, man.
Because it had, I mean, I'm sure he enjoyed it somewhat. But yeah, anyway, it cracked me up, because whenever anything bad happened, we never told him either. We kind of just hit it and didn't say anything.
Yeah.
But I get it. I get the whole, you know, it took me a bit to get into fly fishing too. And it's not the easiest thing in the world to do. And if you don't have time to learn how to cast because it is quite a bit different.
Yeah.
You know, I've tried to go back to, you know, I go with my dad walleye fishing a couple times, spin casting, and it's a totally different world. I just remember going back to that, and I was like, wow, it's completely different. But anyway,
well,
that's cool. Maybe you'll get him into it one day.
I'm sure I will. I'm gonna keep pushing him, just like I'm gonna keep pushing him to get into shooting a trad bow. But yeah, the spin fishing thing is not, and I'll be honest, I don't do it much anymore. Last year I cast a spinner a few times and caught a few fish, but even it's different. It's learning to, you still have to learn how to read the water, and it's not so much in those big pools like I was just talking about, but the pockets, and we used to catch a ton of fish in those little pockets. And Mike was even talking about that, you know, he wasn't having much luck. Now that changed a little bit, on Sunday, but you know, he struggled a little bit, throughout the day on Saturday. In fact, and that's where I was leading into. So we fished that little area a bit, and then we walked back up. Well, excuse me. I'm sorry. We fished that area a good bit. Then we went back down to that big run, right next to the campsites that I was talking about. Cause when we got there, there were two other guys there, and I almost felt like they tried to talk us into going elsewhere. And, you know, we just said, you know, give us a little bit of room to park. We're not going to fish on top of you. And we didn't, but by the time we worked our way back down to that, that other long run, they had already left. And in years past, you usually can pull a few fish out of that. We struck out. And it was, I started to say a while ago, you know, that their first cast and their first swing and hook into a, you know, a really nice brookie. And I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be an awesome trip. Yeah. You know what happened? We didn't catch.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mike pulled one out of that first pool, I think, on the spinner, and then nothing. We couldn't buy a fish. So We headed back up to the truck, and then we just said, you know, let's just ride up the road and see what other people are doing. And we saw a few people fishing. Now you also have to understand, up until I really stopped going, 10, 11, 12 years ago, where I went, you know, almost every year, I would typically, if I didn't leave Thursday right after work, so I could get up there, pick a campsite, get my tent set up and everything else. And then Friday you're just hanging out because the season's closed. But we would do some hiking and there's some other things that we used to go look at. There's some old historic cabins and stuff like that. But anyway, if you got up there after, you know, 10, 11 o'clock on Friday, the day before, you had a hard time finding a place to camp. And you'd have to see it, but there are tons of campsites and they were just always full. And now you might see seven or eight places where people are camping. So it's, that dynamic's changed a lot too. And I'm not sure exactly why, but anyway, we drove a several miles up the stream, just kind of talking about spots that we had fished in the past, reflecting a bit. And we get up to kind of where we normally just stop because we rarely have ever had any luck once the stream gets starts getting really a good bit smaller. You'd have to see this stream, but you get up so far and the rocks turn into absolute boulders. I mean, you're talking about, you know, the majority of the rocks are the size of Volkswagen Beetles. I mean, they're just huge. But anyway, we drove up to a certain spot. We saw a couple of pools that we wanted to try. So we grabbed our gear again and headed back through, navigating back through all this rhododendron mess, and got back on the stream. And the plan was, because I was, again, still fishing streamers, I was going to fish from upstream, downstream, and Mike was going to walk down a ways and fish coming upstream. And when we met, we decided what we were going to do. And once again, first cast, because it really wasn't the first cast, it was one or two, but it's the first pool I was at, hooked into another really decent sized fish. I mean, it was giving me a fit on that 4-weight split bamboo Derek built for me, and get it up, and it's another 14-15 inch brook. Now, I didn't state this, but we didn't used to catch any brooks on this stream. All we caught was mostly rainbows, and you would catch a few browns here and there. But so far, all we've caught is brook. And so I'm assuming that at some point the state has either started introducing at least some, if not more, brooks into the stream than anything else, because I think we ended up catching a few rainbows on Santilla later in the day, but for the most part, all we caught was brook trout. So Mike comes up to me. I caught one. He's caught one. Now, again, spin fisher, fly fisher, and we're now 2 for 2. Both of us are tied up. That would continue the rest of the day. When we ended the day, Mike had caught 8. I had caught 8. So and I was feeling, let me tell you something, I was feeling really damn good about myself at that point.
I bet you were. I would have been.
So we walked back out, and I had left my truck at the first spot, and we were riding Mike's little Jeep, and we come back out, and Derek and Susan are pulling up. So they kind of hooked up with us and asked us where we wanted to fish, and that's where the second spot that we always want to fish comes in. And this one is, and I think I may have even mentioned this on here before, Nick, but we call it the swimming hole. Do you remember me mentioning that? And
I think so. Yeah.
Susan, as soon as Susan saw it, she was like, "That is so cool." But when we were kids, we didn't know anything. We were stupid kids. We named it the swimming hole because we kept trying to figure out why somebody had painted lines on the bedrock. Because this whole, the biggest part of this pool is just one big slab of bedrock. And then as it gets deeper on the far side again, it gets into some rocks and so forth, but I'm talking about a space. It's probably 50 foot long. And the part that you can actually see that's all basically one flat rock is probably 20 foot wide. And I mean, it's just one solid sheet of rock, but there's quartz veins running through it. And these quartz veins are perfectly straight. I mean, and they're about 1.5 inches, 2 inches wide, maybe 3 inches wide. But even standing up at the road, looking down at the stream, it looks like swim lanes because there's two of these quartz veins that's just running through, through that bedrock at this pool.
That's cool.
So anyway, that's where we headed to next. I didn't mention this earlier. Mike decided this was the spot he wanted to break out the rod that Derek brought for him to try out. I told you Mike doesn't fly fish, right?
Right.
So Derek made I don't know the length. I don't know anything about it. I wished I had asked him more questions. But I would say it was probably like a medium size spinning rod.
He made one out of
split bamboo, and he didn't say it, but you know, he brought it specifically for Mike to give it a shot. a trial, which I thought was really cool. So Mike, you know, I made the mistake of telling Mike what I paid Derek for mine, and Mike was kind of scared to death of it, but he put his reel on, got everything strung up and rigged up and walked down, and he hadn't been fishing with it just a couple minutes and caught a nice, I think that was a rainbow. And he played that thing up and he fished it a few more minutes, didn't have any luck. And I'm trying to be as descriptive as I can when I tell these stories, but the swimming hole, if you go about 150 to 200 yards upstream from what we call the swimming hole, the creek splits. And part of the, about half of the stream goes, takes off to the right and makes this big, almost like a triangle, but it's really more of a curve. It makes a big sweep. The whole thing is probably a quarter mile, maybe a little bit longer before it comes back. And it comes back in to the swimming hole on the far side from where you walk down to this big pool to fish. And I had gone up that trip. It's not a tributary, but it looks like a tributary. But I'd gone up that years ago, and there's some really nice pools up there. So I talked Mike into going with me, and he said, there's no way I'm trying to cross this thing and go up in all these the rocks that I'm looking at with this rod that Derek made. So after he caught one fish, he took his reel back off and gave it back to Derek. He said, he just told me he didn't want anything to happen to it. But Derek and Susan jumped in and fished a bit there. Derek fished with her. And to be honest, the rest of the day, Mike and I would catch a few here and there. And I know he didn't, because Derek kept saying he had to redeem himself. So if I'm not wrong, and Derek can correct me if I am, but this was Derek's third trip, and I don't think up until this trip Derek had managed to catch a fish. He may have caught some little ones last year. He and Tom went on one of the little tributary streams when the water was so high because we had such a bad rainstorm. And it seemed like him and Tom may have went and caught some little wild brookies, little, you know, 3-inch, 4-inch, 5-inch fish. But I can't remember. I know he has not caught anything off the main big Santilla Creek. But now last year he had problems with his knee. So he went out fishing for a little while, and then he was pretty much stuck in the cabin. In fact, he couldn't even load his gear up when we went to leave last year because his knee was just, it was killing him. So anyway, at this point on Saturday afternoon, by this time it's Saturday afternoon, Derek is fishless. We drive back to the spot that Mike and I had started at that morning because we knew there was more fish in that first pool we started at. So give Derek some directions, and Mike and I had wanted to do something that we used to do when we were younger. We left my truck, we hopped in his Jeep and drove about a mile downriver, parked his Jeep, and then we hit the stream, and we just fished our way that mile or so back to where Derek was. And we were, again, I think at this point, it was two or three fish apiece. It wasn't many, maybe three. And we start working our way back up, fishing these deep runs. And Mike will catch a fish, and then I will catch a fish. And we come up to this one section, and I found a good place to cross. And again, this is not a huge stream, but it can be challenging to cross because of the speed of the water. And it can be hard to find a place where you can cross safely. Especially without a wading staff, which I didn't have this trip. So anyway, I get across the stream, we're working our way up, and we come to this not overly large, but really another really deep run. I mean, I know the thing has got to be 10 feet deep at least. And first, I can't even tell you why I did it, Nick, but I've been fishing the same little brook trout flies, streamer flies, and woolly buggers, pretty much swapping back and forth every now and then the whole day. And this thing was so fast and so deep, I said, you know what, I'm going to try getting as deep as I can. And I pulled out a streamer box that I almost never even open, and it's got these gaudy, pretty big woolly buggers, and I don't even know what the others are, but some of them have these the cone heads on them. When I say big, I'm talking about a streamer that's probably 3 inches long, and it's got a bead on it that's, you know, much bigger than a pencil eraser. I mean, it's a big cone head.
I've seen those. And then, and what you got there, Steve, is your what the hell box.
That's pretty much it. So I just get up at the head of this run, and I start dropping this, and I'm just standing over the water almost. I'm not casting. I'm just standing in the edge of the water. And keep in mind, I'm still fishing this 4-weight split bamboo that Derek has built for dry flies. And, of course, I'm out there with these big, gaudy streamers. And I drop this thing right at the head of the pool. And as soon as I feel it, you know, hit the end of my, or tug on the end of the rod, I start just stripping line as fast as I can. And I keep mending and pulling my line back up towards the head of that pool. And I do this like 4 or 5 times. And then I just let it sink. Because there really is no way to swing this, right? I mean, it's not wide enough. So I'm just letting it sink and letting the line go, and I keep mending it, trying to keep as little surface tension. Oh, and if I didn't mention this, I'm also fishing weight forward floating line. So this isn't a sink tip. But by the time I get, by the time this thing gets, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 feet down from me, I can't even see the end of my fly line anymore. It's pulled it down that deep into this run. Wow. And I let everything tighten up, and I just know, you know, it's gonna swim at cone head, and the current's gonna make it swim a little bit. And sure enough, about the time this thing starts to rise, I mean, it something hammers this thing, and I'm like, "Hull!" And when I first, you know, I just instinctively set the hook, and I mean, you've caught enough average size trout. You catch an average size trout, and most of the time, what does it do? You see it take off running towards to try to get into current, and it's, you know, it'll mm-hmm. it'll play you. This thing doesn't do that. I just feel a solid tug as this thing just starts pulling straight downstream from where I'd hooked into it. And Mike is, I don't know, Mike's probably 50, 60 feet from me. The river's loud. And I think I yelled something at him like, "You're going to want to see this." And he looks up, and this little 4-weight is just, I mean, it's bowed. And one thing that Derek has told me is to, you know, you can't raise this like you would a graphite rod and put, you know, you can't bend it until the tip touches the butt. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. So I'm cognizant of this thing is just bowing like crazy. And, you know, it ended up not being what I would consider a monster trout, but in this particular run, and as deep as this joker was, he gave me a fit. And by the time I finally got him up and into the net with that 4-weight rod, I took a few pictures and, you know, it tried to immediately get him because he was just done. I mean, he was spent. But right. It ended up being I didn't measure him. I couldn't measure him based on the size of my net. And the way he was laying in the net, I know he was 16, probably closer to 18-inch brook trout. Biggest one I've ever caught in my life. Just absolutely gorgeous colors. Dark, dark back with the olive green worm markings all down his back. The belly on this thing was just cream colored, and the fins had that, you know, almost that maroon orange tinge to them. I mean, just absolutely beautiful fish. And if I hadn't caught anything else that weekend, that made the trip for me. I mean, just absolutely stunning.
That's awesome. Did you post that?
There's a picture of it. There's a picture of that fish because all I could do was, I mean, I'm standing there in the water holding my rod, holding it. And I didn't want to take him out of the net and handle him just because you could tell it was just done. It was just played mm-hmm. out. So I wanted to get back to the water.
Yeah, a lot of time. Yeah,
but it's there. There is a picture of it. The first set of pictures I posted from Saturday evening when I got back to the cabin It's in there. If you look, you'll see it. But again, it's hard to tell how big it was because it's a part of the body's curved down into the water, and it's, you know, it's not laid out flat. If I could have held it up, you know, in both hands, you could have really seen how nice it actually was. But and Mike was too far away from me to really get any pictures. I mean, he watched this whole thing play out, but when he did try to finally get up to where I was at, he had to actually work his way around a big rock that kind of came out of the water and turned into the mountain the side of the mountain we were on. And he almost slipped and went right in the stream when he was trying to work his way around it. So I'm glad he didn't try to hurry up and get over there. But that was the high point of my Saturday. We ended up, like I said, we ended up catching 8 apiece, which I don't think's ever happened. Mike just always smokes me with a spinning rod. And I felt so bad for Derek because he finished up today and had no luck whatsoever, but that would change on Sunday. So anyway, we loaded up, we headed back to the cabin. It was my night to cook. I actually carried all my cast iron with me and did some baked red potatoes, cubed red potatoes, and did baked lemon chicken in the oven.
Yeah, that sounds
and
awesome.
Did some Jerry Russell's special green beans. I don't know if I've told you about those, but Jerry fixed those for me one time, and it's about the only way I eat green beans anymore. But it's real simple. If anybody wants to try it, you basically take you buy the bagged steaming bag. Can't remember the brand. It's the full length green beans. You buy the bag where you steam it in the bag in the microwave. You steam those in the microwave just like the instructions tell you. You get I do cast iron, but you can do any skillet. You know, put enough olive oil in the pan so that you won't burn the beans. I add probably a half a teaspoon of garlic. Let that brown up before I put the beans in. Then I put the beans in, sprinkle soy sauce over the top of them, and then just sit there and rotate them in the olive oil a little bit. Just give them just a little bit of a cook, maybe 2 or 3 minutes in the skillet, and then take them out. And they are just absolutely phenomenal. So that's what we had for dinner Saturday night.
That's awesome. I thought you were going to tell me you just soak them in vinegar.
Nope.
I thought that was a southern thing to do with green beans.
I've never eaten a green bean soaked in vinegar.
Or whatever. Well, you know, actually, you know, Andrew Harper, though, made me, I don't know if it's called Julianne green beans or whatever. I can't remember what it was. But his green beans at camp at Wild Things that year were like that. They had like a vinegary, like a...
Really? I don't remember that.
Yeah. I don't know if it was vinegar. I don't know what it is. Maybe, you know, somebody who listens to this can correct me on that. But
Tom probably can.
I said, "This is incredible, Andrew." And he goes, "Yeah, it's about the only thing I know how to make."
Which was a complete...
Which, yeah, I know. But it was funny because he goes, "I'm really not a good cook. I only know how to cook this stuff."
Gotcha.
But anyway, that sounds awesome, dude. And you did that all cast iron, huh?
Yep, all cast iron. We had a good meal, good socializing. More of the old stories came out, and you know, well, more stories from the stream, more stories from my childhood growing up, and things my brother loves to embarrass me about, things that I love to embarrass my brother about. I think the high point of the things that I used to do to my brother that came out. My brother was a very sound sleeper. I mean, he would set his alarm clock. And I'm talking about when we were in school, right? When we were in high school. And he would set his alarm clock, and he would hit snooze, and he would hit snooze, and he would hit snooze. And being the good brother that I am, I had a little tape recorder. And one day when he wasn't there, I took my little tape recorder, and I took his alarm clock, and I recorded that alarm clock beeping for like 15 minutes. And one morning, he's in the bed, and it was like 5 o'clock in the morning. He doesn't have to be up, but I go in there and I slip that tape recorder under his bed and press the play button, and then just stood outside his door laughing my butt off, listening to him. He almost destroyed the alarm clock, trying to get the alarm clock to stop beeping, and the alarm clock wasn't beeping. So Anyway, things you do to your brother. So, anyway, everybody kind of turned in that night. We were pretty much exhausted. Jumped up Sunday morning, same routine really, except this time Derek headed out with us this morning, and we decided that instead of going back to Santila, we wanted to try a different stream. Now, the stream that we camped on, or excuse me, that the cabin was on, Derek calls it glamping now, which everybody's heard of, but that is Snowbird Creek. And where Santila Creek is just a hatchery-supported stream, Snowbird it's just a mixture. So from where it runs to the main highway, which is, I think it's 143, up until past the place that we had our cabin, it's all, they just call it designated hatchery supported. It's catch and keep, catch whatever you want to do. The section of the stream that we were heading to fish runs through a campground, and I swear I don't believe it was the last time I fished it, but we get there and this section is now delayed harvest, which is fine. Mike was going to keep a few fish to take back, and ultimately he decided not to anyway, so it really didn't matter. But we, you know, we get there, we drive through this campground. It wasn't overly early. I'd say it was probably 7:30 when we got up there. But where this stream flows, or the section we were going to fish, it's down in a valley, and you know, the temperatures were in it was freezing both mornings. In fact, I had a hard time getting my wading boots on Sunday morning because they were just frozen bricks of ice.
Oh man.
But we're riding up, and there is in fact, I posted video from this same little pool. It's a big pool. I posted video and pictures from this same pool in 2021, but I didn't fish it last year. So as soon as we saw this pool, I was shocked to see there was nobody fishing there. So we both pulled off and said, you know, this thing's big enough. Let's just jump in there and see what we can do. So all three of us bail out, get our gear together, and head down to this pool. I start at the head of the pool. Mike starts about midway, and Derek goes all the way down to the tail end, and he just starts working his way down the tail of this pool and crosses the stream and actually gets on the other side. I was tickled to death to be tied with my brother at the end of Saturday was very short-lived Sunday morning. He was just wearing them out in this pool. And again, when I say this thing was probably about the size of an average size house. I mean, it's a big little pool of water on a creek like this. And I'll come back to this whole thing in a minute, but I would say by the end of the day, and Mike could chime in and comment on this when we post it on the website, or Derek could, or comment on Facebook. I know by the end of the day, we had to have pulled close to 70 fish out of this pool.
Wow.
I mean, it was just, it was stupid, to be perfectly honest. I'm catching them with streamers. Now, by the end of the day, I kind of lost count, but I was somewhere in the 16 to 20 fish range by the end of the day. Mike, I no idea. I mean, it just absolutely no idea how many fish he caught, because he not just in this one pool. I'm talking about for the course of the whole day. And even Derek's lighting them up too. I mean, he got to fishing nymphs and we were just sitting there laughing. He was pulling fish out of this thing at the tail end of it, where the creek had really flattened out and was wide. And you'd almost think there wasn't any fish in there, and he's pulling fish. I would say Derek, over the course of that day, he lost count as well, but I know he had to have caught 25 to 30 fish total.
Well, he broke the slump then.
Oh, he kept saying he said, "I've redeemed myself. I've redeemed myself." Well, so you know, later on into the morning, I put it this way. There's a video of me in fishing in this pool on one of those two posts on Facebook. I don't remember if it was the first or the second. It was the second. It was the post I made, the second post I made, because Mike shared the video with me.
Yeah, I recall seeing that. Yeah.
And I was up, not quite to my waist, but pretty close to my waist, and I would fish till I just had to come out of the stream. The first time I turned around and tried to come out, I thought this is going to be bad because I couldn't feel my feet. I couldn't feel my legs. Just completely numb, and I'm stumbling trying to walk out of these rocks. And, you know, with this crew, the last thing I want to do is take a swim because I'll never hear the end of it. But Mike, I don't know how many caught, but I will say he hooked into and there's a picture of this one posted, a really, really nice brown, probably 16, 17 inch brown, and caught several other really nice ones. Again, at this point, nobody has caught what we would call a stocker, a stockfish. They're all of them are brightly colored. They're much larger than the, you know, the 10, 11 inch stocker fish. Just darker color. Derek even caught one that looked like his fins were about worn off. So these fish were all holdovers. When they were stocked, I don't know, but it was definitely not fish that were stocked, you know, during the month of March when the streams were all closed. I'm catching fish on the little brook trout. I'm catching them on woolly boogers. I've caught a couple on the cone heads. And get this, eventually at some point, we all just kind of looked at each other and said, I'm tired of catching fish out of this one hole. Let's go somewhere else. So we pulled all our gear, got out of the water, got up to the vehicles, had a snack, and then we started driving because Derek had pointed out that he saw on trout routes that once you get to the end of the road where it dead ends into a trailhead, from there upstream, it's designated as a wild trout stream. So now you're talking about the course of several miles. This goes from a wild trout to a delayed harvest to a hatchery supported stream. And I knew Derek wanted to try the wild section. So we drove up to the end of the road. I actually switched out to a little two-weight rig, and I don't remember what Derek, I think Derek, oh yeah, he did. I know he did. I think his was a three-weight though. He's got these two little three-weights. He calls the rods Twiggy, and they're like 6 foot bamboo rods that he's built, like three-weights. And, Mike That's and cool. I lost Derek. We don't know where he went. He had to get to the wild section. You had to walk down this trail, cross a bridge a walking bridge that went over the stream. And then you could follow a trail up the far side. Mike and I didn't cross the bridge. We just hit the stream and started walking up, you know, through the water or excuse me, through the rhododendron along the edge of the water. And we never saw Derek cross the bridge. So I guess we probably fished it for a couple of hours. Really didn't have much luck. I had a couple of light hits, but nothing, you know, never brought anything to the net. So Mike and I were like, we wondered where Derek went. So we worked our way back. We didn't see him. We didn't see him below the bridge. So then we kind of figured, well, he must have crossed over and went upstream. So we don't want to mess with him. So we started working our way back downstream. We ended up getting back in Mike's Jeep and driving down a ways and parking. And this is do you remember the Hellbender? The big salamander?
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay.
Yeah, you posted some video. Those are rad. I've seen them elsewhere too, and I'm like, wow, I can't believe, I don't know what I would do if I saw one of those.
Yeah, they're pretty rare, especially in North Carolina. But anyway, we headed back down and we were going to fish the area where I saw that Hellbender in 21. And, you know, we fished a few pools, fished a few pockets here. Mike managed to bring I think I may have caught one. Mike brought a few. Wasn't having a ton of luck, and we ended up hour or so later, we hopped back in the vehicle and drove back up to try to figure out what happened to Derek. And we got back up there, and Amy and Susan had come down, and Derek was back at the truck. So we had lunch there, Amy and Susan finally came back out, and we all sat there and chatted a bit, and then, you know, got some group photos, and then they headed back to the cabin, and we sat there and talked about it for a few minutes, and we said, they won't go back to that, that deck pool. So that's what we did, and proceeded to start catching fish again. Just, you know, I mean, I'm talking about every time we cast, but it was with enough frequency that you know, by the time you thought, well, I guess I fished it out, I'm not going to catch any, bam, you know, you'd get another one. And then Mike kind of ditched Derek and I and said, I'm going to start, you know, I'm going to go upstream. And he went upstream and started fishing those little pockets that we were talking about earlier. And he came back by and said, you know, I caught a few fish. I'm just going to keep doing that, you know, downstream. And I said, okay. So I kind of switched. I wanted to switch from the streamers. I had been fishing nothing but streamers. And I pulled one of my fly boxes out, and lo and behold, the first fly I saw just staring me in the face. I said, you know what? I tied these things. I loved the fly. I loved hearing the history behind the fly. I've never caught a fish with it. We got to go with the Tups. Indispensable. So I tie this Tups. Huh?
I said, of course you did.
Yeah. Handsome. And I tied this thing on and cast across stream, almost kind of right at Derek's feet, and let it swing around, and 6 foot into the swing, trout just nailed it. And I ended up catching like three or four more off my Tups dispensable. Is it Tups dispensable or indispensable? I can't remember.
It would make more sense if it was indispensable, right?
I think that's what it is. I think it's the Tups. I'd have to look it up now. For those that don't know, it is a fly that originally was made using the wool from a male sheep's testicles.
Hashtag sacking up.
Yep. And if you're interested in it, go on YouTube and do a look at go to Mad River Outfitters YouTube site and do a search for Tups, and you'll find it. He even tells you how it got its name. But now, you know, there's replacement materials. I'm not tying
with. It's a classic design and a rad fly. It's in that 50 flies that, or isn't that 50 years of flies or 50 flies that changed fly fishing or something like that book I love.
Yeah,
it's in there, and it's got a really cool history. You should definitely check it out.
It's got a cool history, and it looks like nothing, but as soon as you see one, you go, that thing will catch fish. Mm-hmm. I guess it would fall into the attractor class, but I tell you what, after catching several trout on that thing, I told myself, I got to sit down, I got to pull all the materials back out, and I want to make a bunch more of the wet versions. I want to make some nymph versions. And I'm even going to make some dry fly versions of it. Because you can make all three. I just, mm-hmm. I chose the wet when I made them. Mainly because I didn't have the right color dry hackle to tie them. But I will be buying some. So anyway, ended up catching off of nymphs, off of wets, off of streamers. I didn't catch any on dries, but Derek caught several fish on, you know, he was fishing dries with a nymph dropper. He caught fish on dries. I mean, he caught fish on everything he threw in the water at some point. He was catching fish off of pink squirrels, purple paragons. I mean, it's flies I've never even thought about fishing, and he's catching nice fish. And I have to say this. We're sitting there. It was me, Mike, and Derek. We're all fishing this pool, and he lets out a hoot. And you look over, and he is fighting. He caught an absolute monster brown. And there's a decent picture of it. We were across the pool from him, so we couldn't. Mike had to zoom in on his phone. But it's a two-hander. I mean, if you see the picture, he caught a really nice brown. Just tickled him to death. I can't repeat on the podcast the shout he yelled out after he landed it. But and I should say, and he didn't have his net, because somewhere along the day on Sunday, he lost his net. So, but, you know, I guess really and truly we can wrap it up there. I mean, there was a few other stories, but honestly, I probably shouldn't go into them because a couple of them just were very irritating.
Those are my favorite.
Not this one. I had two guys. I'll go ahead and tell the one that really bugged me. Mike and I drive down. We park. There's a little bridge that's gated off. And Mike asked me which one he want. And I said, it doesn't matter to me. I said, but if you're going to do your spinners, why don't you walk down a little ways again and work your way back? And I'm just going to go fish at the bridge. At this point, I'm not going to say I was tired of catching fish, but I was exhausted. And honestly, I was just wanting to be lazy. And I went over to this bridge, and right below it, there's a deep run that runs down below it. And I get out there and I was fishing with a woolly bugger at that point. It goes across. I ended up catching one fish. So I know there's more in there, right? And I look up and here these two guys come. I see them walk up right behind where I walked down. They were spin fishing. I don't know if they were spinners or bait, doesn't matter. But, I figured, you know, they see me there, they're going to go on about their business. Nope. They literally walked right up beside of me, maybe 20 feet from me. And the first guy actually casts his line across my fly line. And my gut was to really let them have it. And I just knew it was probably not going to go well. So I just pulled my line up, tied off, and walked out. So it's just not worth getting into the fray with them, and then find out driving. What's that?
No, go ahead. God, I hate that. I don't know why people think they can do that fishing. I just, it drives me crazy. It brings up the worst people sometimes.
I don't know either. Like I said, I really wanted to let it bother me. We're driving back to the cabin after we wrapped up that day, and lo and behold, three cabins up from our there's the white Tahoe and the two jerks were out in the backyard of the cabin. I just said, "Oh, Derek wanted to." We ended up having a dozen and a half eggs left. Derek wanted to egg them on the way out, but we didn't. So, I guess I'll start wrapping this thing up. And I want to give you, if you got any commentary or questions, but Mike had to leave. So for me, it's a 2.5 hour drive. For Mike, it's about a 4.5 to 5 hour drive. And Mike had to head out about, I think he ended up heading out about 3:30. So when he was done, you know, we chatted a few minutes and he got his gear in his truck. And I had a tree stand that I'd bought from Jerry Russell that I wanted him to carry back for us to use this fall. So loaded that up in his Jeep and he hit the road. And I ease back down to where Derek is. Derek will not leave fish to find fish. That's the damn truth. He was still fishing in that same, and he's still catching fish. So I went down and I ended up pulling one more. I think it was one of those where, you know, I want one more fish. So I went down and I don't even remember if I was still fishing wets or if I'd gone back to streamers, but I do know I ended up pulling one more fish out of there. And I looked over at Derek, just told him, I said, I'm going to go up and get my gear off, get my stuff stowed away. You keep fishing. I'm kind of tired. Plus I could feel my stomach rumbling a little bit. I knew it was going to be a time in a minute. So, I went and took care of my business and then I went and took care of my business. And, after all that, I came back and I walked up and was just kind of watching Derek fish and, you know, just kind of taking in the scenery. And I think he might have caught one more, and I saw him kind of start pulling all his stuff together. So I knew he was about to come out, and he crossed the stream, climbed up the bank, and the bank where we were having to climb in and out is probably about I don't know 6 foot, maybe 8 foot down to the actual stream. So he gets up there, and as he's walking towards me, I take one last look at the stream, and I remember seeing him that morning. Now, before I tell you this, this is just my luck right here. And I'm going to build up to what happens in a few little mini stories. So I mentioned that this is a delayed harvest stream. For those that haven't fished delayed harvest streams, that is single hook, no trebles, artificial only. That's it. And it had bugged me the whole morning that there were two empty worm containers at this pool, probably from Saturday. So not only were they breaking the law by fishing with live bait, but then they couldn't even clean up the trash behind them, probably because they didn't want to get caught carrying worm containers.
Right.
So Derek comes up and I said, you know, somebody should go and clean this trash up from these slobs. And Derek said, well, I get it. And I said, no, don't do that. I said, you still got all your gear on. You got to climb back up that hill. I've already stripped my waders off. And I'm back in my shoes. Now, normally I carry my Salomon boots, and that's what I wear when I'm not in waders. Another lazy decision that morning. Why am I going to put on boots and lace up boots when I'm only going to wear them to drive to and from the stream? So I just grabbed my Skecher loafers.
Oh, no.
So I tell Derek, I'll go get the trash. So I go down, I pick up the first one, and the second one is 10, 12 feet away, and I have not even thought about it at the point right now that I don't have my wading boots on. I don't have my felt bottoms on. I've got these Skecher loafers with glass pretty much on the bottom, and I've got to step on a boulder size of a wash tub, if you know what that is. Average size of a kitchen table, probably. A little bit smaller than that. And Nick, I didn't even think. I basically went from one dry rock to that rock, and you fall a lot faster when you get older.
I'm noticing.
Dude, I went down hard. I mean, when I say I went down hard, I felt my foot went out from under me so fast, I had time to realize I was levitating before I hit this rock. And I came down hard on my left upper thigh. And I'll be honest, when I first hit, my first thought was I just broke my leg. I mean,
oh no,
it everything went black and sparkly. I didn't hit my head. That was the good part. I didn't tweak a shoulder, which was the next thing that I was thankful I didn't do. But my left hand, I sprained my thumb really bad. It got folded way back, and the meaty part of my palm right below my thumb swelled up about twice as big as normal, and a lot of road rash on the outside part of my palm. But I just had to roll over and lay there in the wet sand and water. I couldn't get up. I mean, even if I tried to get up, I was going to pass out. I mean, I couldn't see, you know, like I said, things just went black really quick, and it was all sparkly. And, you know, and there was a point in time where I felt like I was going to throw up. And so I just laid there. Derek, meanwhile, is less than 20 yards away. And because of the noise of the water, he's clueless. He doesn't know anything's happened. And nothing against Derek. There's no way he could have known, right? Mm-hmm. So I laid there, and I finally, you know, the stars went away. The birds started chirping. The ringing went out of my ears. And I felt like, okay, I need to try to sit up first, which I did. And my whole left leg is just, I mean, I can feel my heartbeat in the left side of my leg. And I said, I got to try to stand up because that's going to tell the tale. And so I stood up, and it hurt, but it supported me. So I knew it wasn't broken. So now I got to climb this 8-foot cliff to get back out to the road. Basically with one leg, because I just can't put much pressure on my left leg at all. Get up the truck, tell Derek what's transpired. You know, he said, you okay to drive? And I said, yeah, I think so once I get in the truck. So anyway, made it back to the cabin in one piece. I woke up the next morning with a softball size contusion on my left leg where I landed on this, you know, sharp part of this boulder. But I actually went walking. I did a 2-mile walk this afternoon. So it's all but better as long as I'm not putting a lot of pressure against it. If I start putting pressure against it, I can feel my toes going numb. So, I mean, it just bruised the heck out of it and probably damaged some nerves or who knows what else. But that's my luck. Last minute, trying to clean up behind some slobs and almost kill my damn self.
That's what you get for being for doing the right thing, right?
That's what you get for being a good steward. No good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah, I don't know why certain people that fish just feel like they have to do that. It's like we're even worse than hunters for some reason. I don't know if it's just easier to do, or especially the encroaching on your actually fishing where other people are. Like, people are so brazen fishing. I just don't get it. Don't seem to fear confrontation or anything at all.
Well, the reason it's that way is because society has gotten to the point where it looks down on throat punching. Because that's, I mean, it. Believe me, you know, you've been around me long enough to know I could fly really hot, and I flew really hot, but I managed to control myself and just say, you know what, it's not going to make any difference. It's just going to cause more problems, so I just left, you know. It wasn't like I hadn't caught any fish. But my achievement Saturday of tying my brother with a spinning rod was greatly destroyed on Sunday, because I don't know how many fish the dude caught. I mean, he had to have caught and released. I know it was 40, probably 50 by the end of the day. But I'm glad
for him. That's awesome for him, though. Yeah, totally. Sounds like you guys had just an awesome time, and I'm sorry I missed it. One of these days I got to go. That just sounds amazing.
Well, you know, for me, a lot of it I know is the nostalgia aspect of it. It's where I caught my first trout. It's where I basically learned how to fly fish. I mean, there's just so many. It's where I met Ricky Steamboat and Wahoo McDaniel. If for anybody who even knows who the heck they are anymore.
You met Ricky Steamboat and Wahoo McDaniel?
I did. No, not Ricky. Ricky Steamboat. No, it was three. Ricky Steamboat, Wahoo McDaniel, and the one everybody knows. I'm drawing a blank. Ric Flair.
Ric Flair?
Yes.
I'm a huge wrestling fan. You've never told me any of this.
So
you have to tell me this at some point here.
I'll tell you it right now. It's a very short story. So
the
area we always, when I was growing up, we always pretty much camped in this same general area. My dad, at the time when we first went up there, he still worked for Sears. He worked a public job, and you know, we had the farm. And some of his coworkers from Sears is who had actually told him about this stream, and he knew that I was just, you know, fantasized about trout fishing, and we didn't have trout where I grew up, so that's why we went up there. Well, anyway. Across the road from where we always camped, and it's still that way today, there was this large grassy area. We always called it the meadow, but it was just this large grassy area, and that's where a lot of people, especially if it was large groups, would go set up tents and have campers and those kind of things. So one evening, I believe it was Friday evening, because the stream had not, the season hadn't opened yet. And we're just hanging out in camp. And I didn't watch wrestling growing up. It just wasn't a big thing that I cared much about. But I knew enough about it to know the characters. And we hear that Ric Flair, whoo, you know. And as soon as you heard it, you were like, is that really who I think it is? And then we heard it again. So Mike and I just said, you know, we're going to walk over and see. And we get over there, and I don't know why they weren't part of any of the group of people that we knew. But at this point, everybody that's in this meadow is kind of in one spot around this big campfire. And lo and behold, there's Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat, and Wahoo McDaniel. So we got to meet all of them.
Awesome.
Didn't get a single autograph or anything. We didn't have any paper or anything to write on, but we got to meet them.
Just there fishing, hanging out?
They weren't even fishing. Like I said, I can't tell you. We didn't ask why they were there, but we never saw them again the rest of the weekend. It was like, I think there was some, because, you know, all of them were from North Carolina.
Yeah, definitely.
And if I remember correctly, they were. Or they were from there, or they spent most of the, or they lived there or something.
A lot of time in the territory there, yeah.
Right. And so. I think they just, there were some people that were going to be there, and they just tagged or went up to see them or tagged along or something, because, you know, the next day they were gone. We didn't see them again. But anyway, it was really cool. We were, I think I was probably 15, maybe 16 at the time. Mike would have been 4 years younger than me, so.
And what year do you think that around this was?
Well, it would have had to been in somewhere between 80, let's just say somewhere between 82 and 85. I can't tell you exactly, man. It's been too long ago.
Interesting. Man, that's awesome. Yeah, I had no idea you did that. And if you told me, I must have forgot, but I don't think I'd ever would have forgot that.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. You know, it comes up every kind of like it just did. It's not something, but it was so, I really remember very little about it, except I remember hearing it. I remember, you know, Mike hearing it, and then we heard it again and walked over, and that's about all I remember. I mean, I remember who it was there, but honestly and truly, we went over just to see what was going on, and then everybody tells us, and we're like, okay, that's great. It's nice to meet y'all. Ready to go fishing. But it just wasn't a big deal to us. It wasn't something that we weren't like huge fans or anything, but it was still pretty cool. We remember it.
Oh, it's real cool.
It's cool to tell about it now, even though we didn't care about it much time.
I would have been like, well, at the time I would have been, obviously, because I would have been like 6 years old. But
well, if you ever make it up here, I can show you exact, because you know it hasn't really changed much. They've added a porta potty, and they've put up some lantern hangers throughout the campgrounds. Is really all that's changed. That same area is pretty much just like it was, you know, back in the 80s. So, kind of cool,
man. Well, that sounds awesome. I'm glad you guys had fun, and it was fun just listening to you get to tell the stories. And I'd love to hear about stuff with you and Mike when you were younger, too. That just cracks me up. I love sibling stories.
Well, there's a lot of them. In fact, it's funny because things that I've either forgotten or just, you know, set aside, Mike will bring up, and I'll go, oh, yeah, I remember that. So I went up and spent three or four days up there a couple of weeks ago because my older two daughters' grandmother passed away, and they asked me to be a pallbearer. So I went up for that and pretty much stayed at Mike's. I worked one day, and the rest of the time I was either, you know, dealing with the funeral one day and hanging out with my dad and Mike a couple of days. And yeah, if you ever get to come up and hang out, and, you know, obviously with me moving up there, you know, sometime in the next year or so, if we get together and hunt, you're going to get to meet, you know, my dad and Mike, and probably hang out and hear some of these same stories, because there's always stuff that comes up. I mean, there's always so many stories that you want to sit there and go, sounds like we're making a lot of this up, but we're not. It's just there's always something silly or stupid going on that just anyway. And there's one gentleman that used to work with us on the farm that is the brunt of a lot of jokes because he deserved it. But like he was a disaster walking. And this just came up, so I'll tell you this and we need to wrap this thing up, but he bought like a 64, 60. I'd have to look it up. I'm not a Chevy guy. So for the Chevy fans out there, no offense, but I'm just not a Chevy person. So I can't, a lot of Fords, I can tell you just by looking at what model it was, you know, year range. And I don't remember this one, but it was one of the, you know, it's like a early 60s model pickup. And he bought this thing and he, I don't know. He got the engine running pretty good. And then he went and got a brand new exhaust system. Or maybe he put the exhaust system on himself. I think he put the exhaust system on himself. And we used to, so we were mostly, the crops that we mostly raised was tobacco, wheat, and soybeans. And the soybeans we had to carry to Raleigh a lot of times. So that was a big deal. But wheat, we always carried, it was about an hour drive. We carried to a milling company that was in Greensboro. And we would carry pickup loads, we'd carry dump truck loads, and we were going to make a trip this one day, and this gentleman, I'm not even going to say his name, but he was just dying to use his trick pickup. So my dad said, well, pull it up here, and we'll load it up. And we loaded that thing up with wheat, and everybody, you know, got in their vehicles, and we cranked up, and we hit, my dad's drive is a half mile long, and it's a dirt road. It's bumpy. And he's driving his truck out, and he gets three quarters of the way out of the driveway. No, he doesn't. He gets all the way out the driveway and hits the, the pavement, and he doesn't go 100 yards and pulls off to the side of the road. And we had to stop and back up to find out what the heck's going on. And we get back there, and he's crawling around under his truck. And we ask him what was going on. He said, it just cut off. And my dad told him, said, get back in and try to crank it. And he would crank it, and it would fire and immediately die again. He's boom, boom, boom. And we're like, what the heck's going on? he ran the new exhaust over the axle between the bed, and with all the weight from the wheat, as he was driving out my dad's driveway, and the back of the truck was, you know, bouncing on the springs, it crushed the exhaust pipes. So they were as flat as they could be. So as soon as he cranked it up, it would fire, and then the engine couldn't breathe, so it just died. But it was stupid stuff like that. I mean, those kind of things happen all the time. But anyway, people really probably don't care about hearing those stupid stories. But
That's fun.
It's fun to sit around and talk about them. You just can't help but laugh. But you're definitely gonna have to. You're gonna have to try to join us soon.
I'll make it, man, and I'll make it to hunt with you sometime over there too. At your place. Where you grew up.
Yep. Well, like I said, let me get moved up there. We'll make it happen. And if I have any luck on this stream over the next 6 months, then at least we might know next year if you've got a time where you could make a trip down here. You don't need to bring anything. I got all the tackle you need. If you could get away for a weekend, you could fly into Atlanta. And like I said, it's a 2-hour drive from my house. And we could go fish for a day or two and then send your butt back home. So we'll get you on those streams sometime in
if I'm gonna fly into Atlanta for the weekend, I'll have to leave on Wednesday to make sure I get it on time.
Well, not if you'll do a direct flight and stay away from, what is it, American?
Yeah, US Airlines, American. I don't fly those anymore anyway.
Fly Delta. It's more expensive, but it's worth it.
Yeah, that's true. So, all right, man.
Well, thanks for joining me, buddy. I hope it wasn't too boring for you just listening to me talk about all the fun I had.
I love listening to you. You're all animated. I love listening to you tell stories.
All right, man. Well, for everyone listening, thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoyed it. And we're going to try to get something back out to you in 2 weeks. Sorry about the extra week this time. But again, like I said, I was dealing with a family situation out of town. But we'll have something for you coming real soon. We've been bouncing around some ideas. Not sure what's coming next, but we'll have something coming next couple weeks. Take care, all.